This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
It is really important that we get our message out to consumers, that consumers know the risks that these practices are creating for their health and for the health of their families and communities.
Factory farms produce a majority of our nation's meat. Over two-thirds of the beef consumed in this country comes from farms with at least 5,000 head of cattle. More than 90% of the chicken we eat comes from only 10 companies. And over the last 30 years, the number of hog farms has dropped to a tenth of what it was, while pork sales have remained steady. With these mammoth farms come appalling conditions and animal overcrowding. The factory farm solution? Hormones and antibiotics, which boost meat production and reduce animal disease. Pharmaceuticals are being used at an unprecedented rate. And if you think you can avoid the drug exposure by limiting or eliminating meat from your diet, the scientific community has some bad news for you. Studies have recently shown that this use of pharmaceuticals on livestock is having devastating effects on our groundwater. This week's guest on Sea Change Radio is Avinash Kaur, a staff attorney for the Natural Resources Defense Council, or NRDC. He tells us about NRDC's role in the fight to regulate and create transparency in how drugs are used on livestock. I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by Avinash Kaur. He is a staff attorney at the Natural Resources Defense Council, the NRDC. Avi, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Thank you for having me.
Tell us what you do as a staff attorney. What's your specialty at the NRDC?
I work on a number of different issues, but over the last couple of years, a lot of my time has been spent on working on the issue of antibiotic use in livestock and animal feed. I work on a number of different ways. I've worked on legislation, I've worked on litigation, and I've worked on what we administrative advocacy, where we work with administrative agencies to help them work through what they're doing and hopefully influence the actions they take.
So you focus mostly on the legislation and you fight for more transparency in factory farming. Can you explain what the modern CAFO is?
Sure. A CAFO is essentially a factory farm. It's a concentrated animal feeding operation. That's what that stands for. And it's where large numbers of animals are confined in small spaces in a modern industrial system for raising animals, essentially.
And why does the NRDC have a problem with this system? And why should consumers?
It's not per se that we're opposed to CAFOs in principle. It's the pollution that we're opposed to. At a lot of times with concentrated animal feeding operations, you get large amounts of manure and air pollution and water pollution coming out of those facilities. And the people who live near these facilities often have to bear the brunt of the odors and other impacts that come from these facilities. So there are certainly concerns about the sustainability of CAFOs and factory farms. The pollution is just the most obvious manifestation of that. But my work in the most recent past has been focused on one specific aspect of this, which is the use of antibiotics in these factory farms, which facilitates keeping these animals in these closed, cramped, often dirty conditions, and the risks that poses for the health of people and the communities that are around these CAFOs.
So let's dive into antibiotic use. 80% of all reported antibiotic sales in 2011 were for livestock. This is an exploding segment of the industry, and it's not just big agriculture, it's big pharma, and there's a lot of big moneyed interests who want to keep this trend continuing. Why is it a dangerous trend?
It's a dangerous trend because we see increasing amounts of antibiotic resistance out there. Antibiotic resistance refers to the phenomenon that when you use antibiotics, bacteria become resistant to the effects of the antibiotics over time, because the ones that are resistant will survive and thrive. And as you get more antibiotic-resistant bacteria out there, when you get antibiotic infections from those bacteria, they're harder to treat. So infections caused by antibiotic-resistant bacteria, or superbugs, as they're colloquially known, can mean longer illnesses, more hospitalization, the use of antibiotics with greater side effects. And when there are no more treatments left, it can also mean death for people when the treatments fail. So there are pretty serious consequences associated with antibiotic resistance. You might have heard your doctor tell you when they prescribe antibiotics to finish the course of antibiotics. The idea behind that is that, you know, you take the full course of antibiotics to kill off the bacteria that are there so that the resistance is less likely to arise. The kind of use you see on factory farms is low-dose use. They use low amounts of antibiotics at a herd-wide or flock-wide level day after day. And it's used to make animals grow faster, to speed up growth, and to compensate for the stressful, dirty, crowded conditions in which these animals live. So the low-dose use is especially dangerous. It's a lot like not finishing your course of antibiotics. It allows the bacteria that are resistant to survive and to thrive in these facilities. And then they can escape off these factory farms into the wider world and get to us eventually. They can get into the water, into the soil, into the air, and travel out from the facilities. They can get on workers who work with the animals, who work with the meat, and work out to the wider world. They can get, you know, those antibiotic-resistant bacteria can be in our meat and have been found in pretty significant numbers in our meat. And as much as anything else, these bacteria can share their genetic material with each other. So when they have resistant traits, resistant genes, they can share that with other bacteria, not just their own kind, but other kinds of bacteria as well. This is the reason that, you know, the prominent medical and scientific groups that have looked at this issue have said this is a cause for concern for human health and have called for action to curb the inappropriate use of antibiotics in animal agriculture.
So the difference between an animal in this feedlot system getting antibiotics versus a human who would go to their doctor and get a prescription is, if, just to keep the metaphor going, I'd go to my doctor and he'd say, well, you're living in just terrible conditions and we just think you should be having, here's like a drink that you should be drinking every day that just has a low dose of antibiotics, and this will keep you from picking up all the, you know, since you live in utter squalor, this will keep you from getting sick. And that's kind of a preemptive strike, which is just a really poor way of administering these drugs, correct?
That's exactly right. This is institutionalized conditions which are facilitated by using these antibiotics. It's a lot like what you said, you know, oh, you may get this disease because of the conditions you live in, and so here, go ahead and put this in your cereal every morning. Or, you know, you think of a preschool where kids get sick all the time. It's like preemptively giving the entire class of preschool kids antibiotics on a daily basis in their food because they might get sick. We don't do that with humans. Why are we doing that with animals and risking greater spread of antibiotic resistance, which, you know, could be devastating for us? The director general of the World Health Organization recently said that we are looking at potentially a pre-antibiotics era, where a cut knee or a sore throat could once again kill. You know, you got to think back to the days before antibiotics were discovered and how life-threatening simple illnesses could be. And antibiotics have changed all that. They've made complicated surgeries possible. And as antibiotic resistance is on the rise, all that is threatened. Now, that is not to say that antibiotic use in animals is the sole cause of that. It's one cause. Use in humans is contributing to the rise of antibiotic resistance, as any antibiotic use does. But we know that 80% of the antibiotic use in the United States is in animal agriculture. So how can we ignore that part of the problem? And that's essentially what FDA has done for the last 35 years.
When I go. To listen to Sea Change Radio anytime, anyplace, just subscribe to our free podcast. Simply follow the link from seachangeradio.com or search for us in the iTunes podcast directory.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to Avinash Kaur. He's a staff attorney for the NRDC, the Natural Resources Defense Council. Let's talk about how this antibiotic use gets into our water. An NRDC 2010 white paper said that estimates suggest that nearly 2 trillion pounds of animal wastes are produced annually in the United States, and that between 25 and 75% of antibiotics are excreted unchanged in feces where they can persist in the environment. Walk us through the fear that Americans should have, or all people should have, about this antibiotic use seeping into beyond just our meat supply. Vegetarians are not necessarily immune from this problem either.
No, not at all, because the resistant bacteria, once they emerge, can travel off these industrial meat facilities in a number of different ways, these factory farms. Water is one of them. So they can get in manure and then get into the water and travel off the farm. They can then be used. The manure, the water can be used to irrigate crops and vegetables, which can then pick up the antibiotic-resistant bacteria. They also the antibiotic-resistant bacteria also get into the soil and travel off the factory farms on the soil, in the air, and they've been found in higher concentrations near factory farms. And then these antibiotic-resistant bacteria also get on the workers on the farm, travel off the factory farms on them, on the meat itself. And they're also able to, and this is an amazing thing, these bacteria can trade resistant traits with each other. They can trade genetic components with each other, so resistance genes. And so one kind of bacteria, a harmless bacteria, can share resistance traits with the pathogenic bacteria that can make us sick. Likewise, they can share it with not only their own kind of bacteria, but with other kinds of bacteria as well. So these antibiotic-resistant bacteria are traveling off factory farms in a number of different ways, and they're able to share the resistant traits with other bacteria and can spread that way too. So the waterways are just one way in which these antibiotic-resistant bacteria are spreading out into the wider world.
So Avi, tell us what the NRDC is doing to increase transparency of this issue. You're in the midst of a 2-year suit against the FDA, correct?
Yeah, so NRDC and its partners brought a lawsuit against the Food and Drug Administration in 2011. The lawsuit focused on two different issues. One was that in 1977, FDA made findings that the use of penicillins and tetracyclines, two classes of antibiotics in animal feed, posed a risk to human health. And they proposed to withdraw the use of those antibiotics, stop the use of those antibiotics in animal feed. But they never followed through. 35 years later, they had not yet acted on those findings. And under the law, they're required to stop those uses once they find that there's a risk to human health. So that was one part of the case. The second part of the case concerned two citizen petitions that were filed in 1999 and 2005, asking FDA to act on a broader class of antibiotics. So not just penicillins and tetracyclines, but five other classes of antibiotics as well. And FDA had neglected to respond to those petitions for 6 and 12 years, respectively, at the time we brought the lawsuit.
6 and 12 years?
6 and 12 years, yes. After we filed the lawsuit, FDA denied those petitions, claiming it was focused on voluntary measures, basically asking the industry to police itself. We challenged the denial of those petitions because we didn't think that was an appropriate basis for denial. We thought they needed to base their denials on factors that are in the law, such as the safety of the uses of those antibiotics and on the science. And eventually, the court agreed with us on both the issues. The court ruled that FDA's denial of those petitions was wrong, that it should have based its decisions on science and safety factors. And it also ruled that FDA's 1977 findings about penicillin and tetracycline obligated it to withdraw the use of penicillins and tetracyclines in animal feed unless the drug manufacturers showed that it was actually safe for human health. Unfortunately, FDA has appealed both those decisions, and we're waiting for a decision from the Second Circuit Court of Appeals right now. But we think those decisions represent some of the biggest advances on the issues of antibiotic resistance and the use of antibiotics in livestock in the past 35 years. So that's one of the major efforts NRDC is engaged in. Other than that, we're working with legislative offices to improve transparency on the use of antibiotics in livestock. Right now, all we really know is how much of a particular class of antibiotics is used in animal agriculture. So for instance, we know for penicillins, X hundred thousand pounds are used in livestock every year. But FDA collects more data. It knows, for instance, how the antibiotics are administered, whether it's through injections or in food or in water. It knows how they are marketed, that is, whether it's prescription or over the counter. And it's not disclosing that information to the public, even though it's made some of that information available in 2009 in response to a request from Representative Slaughter of New York. So we are pushing FDA to do better, and we have supported legislation that has been introduced that would require FDA to make that information public. We are also supporting legislation in Congress that has been introduced to phase out the non-therapeutic use of antibiotics in animal agriculture. When I say non-therapeutic use, I mean the use of antibiotics in animals that are not sick and don't need them. Don't need the antibiotics. That's because they're being used to make animals put on weight more quickly and to basically compensate for the horrendous conditions they often live in. So we have a number of different efforts afoot, as you can tell. The lawsuit is one, and then we're also supporting legislation, as I mentioned, both to improve transparency and to phase out the inappropriate use of antibiotics.
You mentioned how the FDA has really dragged its feet on addressing these issues. But what about the EPA? Is there a way to get them to act on this issue since it gets into our water supply through animal waste? Are there any lawsuits and any ways to try to enforce antibiotic legislation through the Clean Water Act and other channels beyond FDA?
So I think with the Clean Water Act, the focus has been on the waste and how it gets into water and how that waste may pollute the water. But FDA is the agency that has jurisdiction over the antibiotics that are used in agriculture, over the pharmaceutical products that are used in agriculture. They approve them. They can withdraw the approval for those uses depending on safety considerations and effectiveness considerations. So that's where we have focused, because they are the ones with the authority to stop this use. Basically, they can say it can be used only for certain kinds of purposes or withdraw approval altogether if there is no safe use for certain kinds of uses.
So because it's food, it actually limits other organizations within the government from trying to enforce what seems like good policy. If this was an aluminum factory and it was polluting the water table, or if it was a pharmaceutical company that was just had its runoff that was polluting the water supply, the FDA wouldn't necessarily be involved because it would be manufacturing. But because this is the manufacturer of food, it actually is the purview of the FDA only. Is that correct?
Sorry, I wasn't clear. So there's two pieces to the issue. The EPA does regulate the waste stream. So if manure and manure products are getting into, so if polluting waterways, then EPA definitely has purview over that and they can regulate that. But in terms of stopping the use of antibiotics in agriculture, that's a drug. So it's an animal drug, and that's regulated by the FDA. So if we want to stop the use of antibiotics in agriculture, in livestock, that is FDA's purview. If you want to regulate the pollution of water by manure, that's EPA's purview. So that's kind of how it breaks out. And so we've focused on trying to stop the practice in the first place, because even if you stop the manure laden with antibiotic-resistant bacteria from getting into waterways, you don't stop antibiotic-resistant bacteria escaping, or superbugs escaping factory farms, unless you stop the use. Any use, especially the kind of use we're talking about, the low-dose routine use at herd-wide and flock-wide levels day after day, is especially likely to lead to antibiotic resistance. And even if you stop it from getting into waterways, it can spread in other ways. So we need to stop the inappropriate use of antibiotics on these facilities. And for that, we need to focus on the FDA.
This world is big and wild and half insane. Take me where real animals are playing. Just a dirty old shack with a hand of bark.
Follow the shift to sustainability with Sea Change Radio on Twitter at twitter.com/SeaChangeRadio and on our Facebook page.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking with NRDC staff attorney Avi Carr. Avi, you just spoke about some of the work that NRDC is doing to help raise awareness of antibiotics and the legislation that it's engaged in. But what more needs to be done at this point? If you had just a personal wish list on 5 years from now, are we going to eliminate antibiotics from our food supply, or are we just going to get a better idea of how they're being administered to the animals that we ultimately eat?
We're pushing for both, to be honest. And we're not trying to eliminate antibiotic use in agriculture. We think it's appropriate to use antibiotics on sick animals. We don't want animals to suffer. But we think it's inappropriate when antibiotics are used as a crutch for instead of better management practices. When they're used to make animals grow faster, when they're used to compensate for conditions on facilities that could be avoided with better management, you could improve cleaning, you could give the animals a little bit more space, you could institute better feeding practices and later weaning. Those kinds of practices can eliminate the need for antibiotics. We have an example. The European Union has banned the use of antibiotic growth promoters in animal feed. And in Denmark, they've got even further. They've actually stopped the prophylactic use of antibiotics and only allow the use of antibiotics in livestock via prescription. And what they've done there is reduce the use of antibiotics by over 50% since they've started instituting those reforms. And they've actually increased pork production in that time. They're one of the largest exporters of pork in the world.
Denmark,
yes. They have an industrialized system of agriculture. It's not exactly the same as ours, but it's still an industrialized system. And they've managed to make the transition and still produce more pork than they used to while reducing antibiotic use by better management practices. You know, they are feeding their animals better. They're taking better care of them. They're giving them somewhat more space. They're cleaning more frequently. They're weaning the pigs a little bit later. You're seeing there are things that can be done to reduce the need for antibiotics. Now, if animals are sick, they're using antibiotics, and we think that's appropriate. But in the U.S., what the FDA has done has been a weak attempt at best. They've proposed a voluntary system, which would basically leave action up to industry to police themselves. It says that what FDA has urged is that pharmaceutical companies voluntarily eliminate growth promotion uses, that is, use of antibiotics to speed up animal growth and basically take away those indications on medicine and not sell for that purpose. But the problem is FDA has said that prevention uses are okay. And prevention uses are very hard to distinguish from growth promotion uses. Essentially, it would allow the same kinds of practices to continue under a different name. You're still talking about low-dose uses day after day on a wide scale. And we think it's a very ineffectual response to a very real problem.
So we've seen an explosion of grass-fed beef as consumers have become more and more wary of antibiotics. Is that the free market working?
Consumers are a very important part of the equation. and market forces are as well. We don't see the efforts that I described as an exclusive solution to the problem. Consumers can and are beginning to act on this issue. They are demanding more and more meat that is raised without the routine use of antibiotics. So we see more and more products on the market that say things like no antibiotics ever or no antibiotics administered. And that's a very encouraging sign. But that's still a relatively small portion of the market. We do encourage consumers to purchase meat raised without antibiotics whenever they can, looking for labels like organic or other certified labels that indicate reliably that meat has been raised without the use of antibiotics. Or they can look for labels that say things like no antibiotics administered, which is not as reliable because those are producer claims. They haven't necessarily been verified, but it's still a step in the right direction.
So do you look toward the example of RBST and in the milk supply, and now you see it increasingly on labels? Do you look at that as a template to build upon?
It's certainly an encouraging story. I mean, RBST shows that consumers care about the issue of what's in their food and will act upon it. And we are hoping the same thing will happen in the antibiotic arena as well. But one difference is that, you know, we need consumers to act, and we need more market forces to help change the dynamic and move more producers towards more judicious use of antibiotics, that is, non-therapeutic uses that are only for sick animals or when sickness is imminent in a small group of animals. But eventually, the problem of antibiotic resistance doesn't stay on factory farms. It's not just in the meat. It's out there in the world and can put our health at risk if we get infections from these superbugs, and it can make our medicines less effective. So in addition to those efforts, we need other efforts to make sure that it's not just a small segment of the market where it's happening. We need to make sure that the market change is broader, and we also need to bring other forces to bear to try and make that change happen as quickly as possible.
Talk about the challenge that your organization faces in trying to take on big ag and big pharma.
Well, it is a tough fight. It's our job to make clear the risks that are associated with this practice and to convince decision makers, both at FDA and in Congress, to do better. But those are not the only actors on this issue. The consumer is a big part of the equation. And so it is really important that we get our message out to consumers, that consumers know the risks that these practices are creating for their health and for the health of their families and communities. And they can help drive change by demanding better produced meat, not just from their grocery stores, but in the restaurants and other places they frequent where they purchase and consume meat. In addition, we're fighting this battle in the courts. Because under the current laws, we have tools to try and stop this practice, and FDA really should be doing much, much better than it is. It's a 35-year odyssey of ineffective responses from the FDA for the most part, and we really think they need to step up and take some meaningful action and not just leave action up to industry so that it's a completely voluntary effort. They shouldn't be leaving the fox guard the hen house. They need to do better.
Avinash Kar is a staff attorney for the Natural Resources Defense Council. Avi, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
Thank you so much for having me.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise. Additional music by Jaco Pastorius, The Grateful Dead, and The Kinks. Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.